From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There are few political topics in America today as controversial as the war in Iraq. Yet the producers of the new cable drama series Over There insist they have no political agenda. Premiering tonight at 10 on FX, Over There follows a combat unit on the ground in Iraq. It's the first time a dramatic TV series has depicted a war as it is still being fought. Tonight on Point, the Iraq War in its debut as television entertainment. But first, we turn tonight to the Pentagon. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld made a surprise visit to Baghdad today to meet with Iraqi political leaders. And General George Casey, top American commander in Iraq, said a fairly substantial pullout of U.S. troops could begin as early as this time next year. No timetable was announced. Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari said today that there is a desire for speed. Matt Kelly is Pentagon reporter for USA Today and joins me now from Washington. Matt, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So your Secretary of Defense popped over to Iraq, and suddenly we're hearing from General Casey that we could see a fairly substantial pullout of American troops by this time next year. Is that ringing credible? Is it ringing true in the halls of the Pentagon?
Well, it's certainly something that General Casey has said before. He said the same thing in March, and several other top generals at the Pentagon and in Iraq have said that their hope is to draw down, in Pentagon parlance, the number of troops in Iraq by sometime next year. Although every time they say that, it is very heavily caveated. They say it is dependent on if the political process goes forward in Iraq as they expect it to, and if the Iraqi security forces are deemed ready to take on the insurgency by themselves.
Matt, we've been talking about that political process and the difficulties there. What about the Iraqi security forces? General Kelly said today that if their development continues to go as it is going, that there'd be a chance of pulling out a lot of American troops. But we hear an awful lot of stories about it not going so well. Are we getting the wrong impression?
Well, there's conflicting reports about how well the training is going for the Iraqi security forces. Investigators from the State Department and the Pentagon issued a report this week that said training of the police force in Iraq, which is about 90,000 or so in various forms of police, was a limited success or a qualified success. But they did note that there were still problems with vetting of the candidates. Too many of them, the report said, were either members of the insurgency or criminals or people who had very little education. The incoming head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Peter Pace, told Congress earlier this month that about a third of the total Iraqi security forces, of about 180,000, were currently ready to perform operations on their own. It remains to be seen how many more will be able to do that by this time next year.
A mixed picture there, but we can hope. Something else General Casey said. He made the statement today while Donald Rumsfeld was in Iraq. The general said the insurgency is not progressing. Now, you know, images that we see on the news are bloody, and they focus on the bloodiest portions of it. But is there consensus on this assessment that the insurgency is not progressing? It often looks otherwise.
Well, it depends on who you ask. General Casey today was saying that the insurgency is focusing more on the spectacular attacks, the car bombings and so forth, that will draw a lot of news coverage, that are designed to sow discord within Iraq, and they're not doing as many of the smaller scale attacks that wouldn't necessarily get as much attention, but would have essentially little pinpricks against the U.S. and Iraqi forces. So it's in part a matter of perception, although in May there was a rather large spike in the number of car bombs. There were something like more than 130 car bombs went off in May in Iraq, which was a very steep increase from earlier months.
A tough picture to read, but those numbers are right there. And Matt, finally, I wanted to ask you, I think about a week ago now, we saw a new report come out on troop morale in Iraq. It presented also a sort of mixed picture, but what are you hearing there at the Pentagon about how U.S. troops are dealing with their deployment? Many have had their deployments extended. Some are coming back for a second tour now. What's the general assessment of the level of troop morale?
Well, again, it's a mixed picture. Troop morale, according to the military surveys of the troops, is much better than it has been, and the troops are getting better psychiatric and mental health care while they're in Iraq. On the other hand, troop morale isn't as high as it could be, certainly. And the stress of repeated tours in Iraq, there are troops there that are on their third and in some cases fourth tours in Iraq, and so that's got to take a toll on even the most dedicated soldiers.
Matt Kelly, at the Pentagon, are they still talking about this war ruining the Army? That was a big word, you know, 6 months or a year ago, that it was just stripping the gears of the U.S. Army in particular.
Well, there hasn't been much relief for the Army yet. The particular strain has been on the Reserve and National Guard forces, who have been very heavily relied upon, especially in the months and years after the active combat phase in Iraq. The recruitment is down for those services, and they're having a hard time keeping enough troops in those units to keep them at full strength. So that is one area where the military is very interested in getting some relief.
Have to keep filling those ranks. Matt Kelly, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Matt Kelly, Pentagon reporter for USA Today. He joined us tonight from Washington. The war in Iraq is all over the television dial. From the evening news to CNN to 60 Minutes, there has been no shortage of nonfiction news and images. Tonight, something different enters the scene. The FX cable channel debuts a new TV drama, Over There, a series that will follow the lives of fictional U.S. soldiers on a difficult tour of duty in Iraq. In the opening episode, the squad moves in to capture Iraqi insurgents holed up in a mosque.
Goddamn dirt infantry there! Sing something, Angel!
I don't know no killing song, Sergeant!
Are you better big one up? Cause this is why we came to this party, goddammit! We didn't come for your oil! We came to kick your ass!
Tonight on Point, we'll hear from Chris Giralmo, screenwriter of Mississippi Burning, who created Over There, with TV legend Stephen Bochco, creator of Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue, and L.A. Law. And we'll talk with Larry Gelbart, the executive producer of MASH, about how war stories fit into the history of television. You can join the conversation as well. How do you feel about a TV drama set in a war that isn't over yet? And can Over There hope to avoid being ensnared by politics? And if a war show, if a show about war, I should say, isn't political, is that a good thing? Is that possible? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Chris Giralmo, who created Over There, along with Hill Street Blues creator Stephen Bochco. Giralmo's previous writing credits include Mississippi Burning and Citizen X. He wrote and directed the premiere episode of Over There, which airs tonight at 10 p.m. on FX. Chris Giralmo, good evening and welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Good evening, Tom. Thanks for having me.
A big night for you. You've been working on this for a long time. Tonight, it hits the screen. You've already seen a lot of response in print from people who've had a sneak peek. What kind of response are you anticipating to this first episode and the take you're taking on the Iraq War?
Well, the critical response has been terrific so far, which we find very gratifying. Now we'll just see tonight who tunes in.
Chris, give us a sense of how you've come at this. What's the narrative structure that you're bringing to bringing the Iraq War into a dramatic series?
Well, first, let me tell you something about how the show came together. John Landgraf of FX last year, just taken over FX, decided he wanted to do the first series in television's history about an ongoing war, and he approached Stephen Bochco.
He was head of entertainment at FX last year. Now he's head of the whole network.
Now he's head of the network. And he asked Stephen Bochco to do it, and Stephen initially declined the privilege, saying, "I'm not a military guy. I'm not sure I could do it justice." And John pointed out to him that he had never been a New York City police detective either, and that his shows about that had worked out pretty well, so he said, "I'll think about it." And at the time, of course, he was watching all the coverage that we've all watched of the war, and he was particularly interested in stories of not only the kids on the ground in Iraq, but of their loved ones at home, and of kids who came back hurt or otherwise forever altered by their experiences, and he asked John if he could make a big part of the show about that. And John said, of course. And then he said, well, I'll do it then if I can get this other guy, meaning me. I'll never be able to thank him enough for thinking of me in that circumstance.
So a big part of it is right there in Iraq, but you're also looking at the relationships these soldiers have and lose with loved ones, relatives, friends back in the States while they're in Iraq.
Absolutely. It's the war seen through the eyes of a young platoon and its sergeant and their wives and parents and sometimes young children as well at home.
Now, I saw some of the first episode, not quite as dirty and sweaty as I somehow picture the war in Iraq, but you're not shying away from violence here. I mean, we get into the blood and gore and screams pretty darn quick. How do you look at how much of that to bring on?
It's actually sweatier than you think. They're shooting up in Chatsworth, where it's 100 degrees also. So they're in full uniforms and sometimes carrying packs and always weapons. And the guys who are playing our soldiers, of course, refer to the people who are playing, the actors who are playing the people on the home front, the wives and parents, as ACs because they get to work in the air-conditioned studio. So again, we're not shying away from the violence. We're trying to treat it relatively discreetly until one of our people, one of our characters, one of our main characters gets hurt, and that you will experience rather vividly. Sadly,
it comes on fast, and it's right there on the screen, even as the war goes on. There's a lot we want to talk about with you tonight, Chris Geronimo. We're so glad you're with us. We're talking about the Iraq War as TV drama, as entertainment in Over There. It debuts tonight on FX at 10 o'clock. You can see it there. But right now, what do you think? Are you ready for the war in Iraq as a television series? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Iraq War as TV drama, as entertainment in Over There, the new FX cable series co-created by Stephen Bochco and Chris Geronimo, who joins us tonight. You can join us as well. Are you hungry for a dramatist's intimate view of the war, of this war? And how do you feel about an entertainment program set in a war that's not over yet? Is this bringing us closer to the war in an important way? Or is this exploitation? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's get a little more sound from the first episode of Over There. Here, just days after their arrival in Iraq, the unit, full of the new guys, the virgins as they're called, take heavy fire from insurgents holed up in a mosque. As mortars are exploding around them, their squad commander, Sergeant Scream Silas, that's Eric Palladino, explains why the soldiers have been ordered not to return fire.
What do you want us to do?
Nothing. We're awaiting orders. We're taking fire outside a mosque. Looks like a goddamn storage unit in Tijuana. And instead of being able to go in and blast the shit out of the bastards, we're ducking, awaiting orders. You know why?
Why?
Because they got a goddamn Arab TV journalist in there with them. Al Jazeera's got us on the goddamn TV news right now. Understand? You have any idea what that means? It means we're going to wait here. Taking fire for some general 75 miles away to make a decision about goddamn public relations. About how it would look if we did this, or how it would look if we did that. That sound like war to you?
Soldiers in the cross currents in FX's new TV drama premiering tonight, Over There. Chris Geronimo, co-creator with Stephen Bochco of Over There, is with us tonight. We'll hear in a few minutes from Larry Gelbert, writer and executive producer of MASH. Right now, Jay is calling from Jacksonville, North Carolina. Jay, what do you think, my friend?
Well, I'm on active duty right now. I serve as a hospital corps with the Marine Corps, and I've been to the desert a couple times. And, I mean, I can understand someone's need to be creative and their need perhaps to be patriotic. I'm not sure what the, you know, motivations are for the show, and I haven't seen all of it yet. But I certainly hope that it ends up being something that's that brings people closer to what really goes on and not just exploitation for profit. I mean, having lost friends and acquaintances over there and know people that lost, you know, family members and loved ones, that I think while it's going on, while the war is still being waged, I to me, it's in poor taste to create something like that, because I really just kind of see it as a way to, you know, produce profits instead of, you know, really give people a taste of what it might really be like, you know, because it's tough over there. I mean,
Jay, let me ask you, you've seen it, you know what it is. If there was a TV show that really showed it as it is, would it be a popular television show?
It might. I think the way best way to show it as it really is to give the reporters a little more freedom while not, you don't want to compromise the mission, but an unbiased view of the war would probably be the best way to report it rather than a TV show that tries to report it, if you will.
Through good journalism, maybe, rather than stories. Jay, thanks very much for your call. Chris Geralmo, how about it? There's a veteran. He's served in the theater that you're depicting here, and he wants to know, what about the taste issue, and what about your motivations? Fox is a business. Profit has to be part of it. What is the spectrum of motivations you bring here?
Well, the first thing you talked about was the journalism and whether or not that's bringing the war accurately to us. And, well, that's another issue, and we can't do anything about that one way or the other, but we can do this. And so what we're trying to do is tell these stories about these young men and women on the ground in Iraq as honestly and as accurately and as realistically as we possibly can, and see what people want to do about that one way or the other.
And what's driving you? What is your motivation?
I'm a storyteller, and I believe and have believed all during my career that it's my job as a writer and storyteller to write and tell stories about the most important things I possibly can. So when Stephen Bochco asked me to do the show about the war in Iraq, about young men and women on the ground trying to get through the day and their loved ones at home, I said yes.
We had stories or TV series China Beach and Tour of Duty, but they came out years after the Vietnam War. Band of Brothers, what, 50 years after World War II. Mm-hmm. Why, while the war is going on, is this inevitable? Is this just the narrower cycle that we're in now? We want a fictionalization of reality, even as reality is still unfolding?
That's a complicated and interesting question. I'll tell you this, though, that if you're asking about the judgment of history of a war, history takes its time in making that. But we don't pretend to represent the judgment of history. We're just we're not judges. We're witnesses. We're just trying to present what as accurate a picture of what we see going on the ground as we can, and in a way that is more compelling maybe than the news possibly can. The news can tell you where the battle occurred and who was involved and how many casualties there were. We're trying to give you an altogether different, visceral experience of what it would be like to be on the ground. For instance, in one of our episodes, one of our young soldiers is searching a house and finds himself virtually standing on top of a bomb, a computer wire to C4, and the wires are suddenly across his boot, and he tries to move his boot out of the way, but the wires go with him. Well, now what do you do? And that's not a situation that the evening news can put you in. So for better and for worse, we're trying to offer our audience a chance to be in situations in which a lot of young people sadly find themselves in Iraq and see what they want to make of that.
Let's hear a little bit more of how you're doing that, Chris Geralmo. Here's a cut, again, from the opening episode. After a brutal firefight, the squad finally captures an Iraqi insurgent leader, and there's chaos, journalists taking pictures and video, and the captive Iraqi, through a translator, screams out a chilling, familiar name.
Now you're going to take me to Abu Ghraib. You have a bag for my head yet? Do you want me to take my clothes off now?
Allahu Akbar!
God is great! There's no God but God! There's no God but God! Wait, wait! 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 Wait, I must go with him as part of the agreement!
That was part of the agreement for his surrender.
Yes!
But he didn't surrender, Mr. Fazal. Remember? He attacked, costing the lives of dozens of his men.
Sound from the new FX TV drama Over There, depicting battle and complexities, and I have to say, right away, a political tinge. out of Iraq. Chris Giralmo is with us. He's co-creator of Over There. We're joined right now from Los Angeles as well by Larry Gelbart, writer and executive producer of MASH, Oscar nominee, Emmy winner. The final episode of MASH, if you can remember it, drew more viewers than any television show in history. Of course, that was set in Korea. Larry Gelbart, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
So you brought Korea to American television screens while Americans were dealing with the final long slide in Vietnam. What do you think of the idea of depicting a war in television fiction while the war is in full swing, Larry Gelbart?
Well, first let me say that I have not seen the show, and I don't want to prejudge anything. And I appreciate the enormous amount of work that goes into a series, twice the work, obviously, in this show, because it's an hour. And to address your question, MASH was a peculiar animal because it was, while distance lends some perspective to the artist, MASH, though depicting a prior war, was obviously influenced by an ongoing contemporary one. That is to say, it was part Korea, part Vietnam that we were talking about.
Sure, and everybody knew it.
It was a hybrid, yeah. Yeah, and in fact, we were, quite honestly, a bit dishonest in attributing some of the 70s sensibilities into these 50s characters.
But because you wrapped the kind of Vietnam War that was going on in the metaphor and the trappings in the history of Korea, for one thing, you could make it, in many dimensions, a straight-up comedy. It's hard to imagine doing that when you're addressing a war straight on as it's taking place.
Well, I don't think MASH, in any case, would have been a straight-on comedy. In as much as you know, you're dealing with the wounded. You're dealing with medicine. You're dealing not so much with the war, but the effects of the war.
Sure, it was always serious, but right off to the side, you had Hot Lips and right on down, plenty of yucks.
Yes, with any luck at all. No one would object to a book called Over There or a motion picture Over There. Unfortunately, television carries with it, stuff we're all too familiar with: network participation, corporate considerations, censorship, the commercial aspect of it, and not the least of it is, of course, to be too obvious about it, this ongoing blurring of the lines between what is real and what is not on television, and dramatization can't help but romanticize the subject. I mean, even the most brilliant sequence in Apocalypse Now, the Charlie Don't Surf scene, it's thrilling. It's anti-war, but it's so exciting you want to join up.
Chris Giralmo, how about it? Larry Gelbart speaks from a lot of experience here. Did you hear the siren? Did you feel the allure of romanticizing the war as you're fictionalizing it?
Well, first of all, let me say to Larry that I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
It's a privilege to be on the air with you. I watched a lot of episodes of your show. And we're not really doing that, no. We're telling story. These are young people, of course, and some of them have romantic ideas about what they're doing. They're 19 and 20 and 21 and 22. So others of them are a little more cynical. One of our characters feels that he made a terrible mistake in signing up already, and that was his second day in Iraq. But others are a little more romantic about the Army.
But you know, it's not that we mean to be romantic about it. It can't help but get romantic when you get, as we all do, you put attractive players into uniforms, you shoot the best stuff you can shoot. It just gets. If not romantic, it gets unfortunately entertaining, which is what
I would say that there's at least one point in our pilot, sort of towards the end of the third act, when in that piece that you played a little bit of sound of, Tom, that it does feel romantic, and it might make you feel like maybe I should do this too, but there's. You're immediately kind of jerked back in the next act. So I would say there are moments where we romanticize it and moments where we are brutally realistic about its human consequences. We're doing a show about war and about the human consequences of war.
You know, but what we can't help, what we can't govern, I'm sure you're well aware, that in a 60-minute show, there's perhaps 41 minutes of content.
Mm-hmm.
So we can always...
It's 45 on late-night cable, but go ahead.
45, well, thank God. But if we live long enough, we'll see, you know, the 30
It'll be down
hours.
To 19, right?
Yeah, without question.
And what about those minutes, Larry?
Well, those minutes take us away from the war. Those minutes, I mean, you know, the only difference in the Humvees we see in a commercial and the ones you'll see on your show will be that the civilian ones will have more armor on them, probably.
But what do you mean it takes us away from the war? Chris is saying, no, we're going to take you right into it, show you just how brutally tough it can be.
He will. We did. But you cannot stop a war and say, we'll get back to all this human misery, but first a word about Rolaids.
It just, I understand what Larry's saying. He's talking about our characters are stuck in situations that they don't have easy egress from the way we do. We
your
can
real,
change the channel or
models.
We can watch the commercial. But our real guys don't get any time off.
And here's the world we're in, where fiction and reality are going to live side by side on that screen. You may go straight from this to the news.
Part of the conditions of the modern world. This war is being fought virtually in real time for us at home anyway. You know what I mean? You can read blogs written by soldiers today. You can read emails from people, if you know them, who are over there.
But those are real soldiers. You've made a deliberate decision to turn this to fiction as well, and we understand it. But let's hear what our callers think of it. Wayne is calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Wayne. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good,
thank you for taking my call, and I enjoy your program.
Thanks.
My thoughts are, I was just worried about how this might affect what I call the video game generation, that age from 12 to 18, how they might perceive this program. Is it a trivialization, or maybe it might desensitize them to the war? You know, the saying that war is hell. I wonder, you asked the question, would people see this program if it was an unedited version of war?
Wayne, let me ask you, did MASH desensitize you to war, or was that different somehow?
It was different because it was a war that took place, had already taken place.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular war is taking place now, and there's still yellow ribbons tied around the old oak tree. People are still very much involved and engaged in this war, so it's a completely different situation, I believe.
Let me ask both of our guests here, Wayne, and thanks for your call. Chris Geromo, first to you. I mean, you get the hooks in real quick. The opening minute of the show is a rowdy young soldier headed off to war making whoopee with his wife before he goes. Of course, it gets tougher. But what about this issue? Do you inevitably desensitize viewers to war by bringing it into the realm of fiction, of drama, of entertainment?
Well, I hope not. I hope what we're doing is, on the contrary, sensitizing the audience to it a little bit. As I said, on the news, you can get one kind of a very dry picture of the war, and in this story, you'll have a much more intimate glimpse of its devastation, as you did on MASH with comedy leavening it. So I hope we're going to sensitize our audience to it a little bit, and I hope that we're going to make it possible for a wide audience in America to look at the war and have an imaginative, of course, experience of it through these characters that will maybe expand their sense of what it's like and what its consequences are. That's what we hope.
Larry Gibbon, I've heard your sort of skepticism here, and yet you know the power of drama when it's taken to the level of art to open our eyes to what's going on.
Well, unfortunately, there's so many overlays in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the latest survey shows that 51% of the American public, that's blue and red states, feel that we were misled. We were deliberately misled by this administration into this war.
Yeah.
Now, the last thing you want to do is look at these soldiers that you're depicting as victims, and yet you have to think these poor guys shouldn't even be there. So you can't. I think it's quite one thing to say, you know, the show is not about politics, but there is no war without politics.
Mm.
I mean, war is the ultimate failure of politics, obviously. The other thing I think that's an onus that I don't even, maybe only I feel this way, but I think it's ironic that the News Corp, Fox, owns both MASH and your new show. When I say owns, you know, it's
no
it's
kidding,
owned. Huh?
No kidding.
No kidding.
And what are you pointing to there, Larry?
Well, I'm pointing to Fox is quite well known as being pro the Iraqi war.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not yet another kind of shadow? Is that another issue in addition to the ones we've brought up right now?
Yeah, great questions. We're going to come to the politics of this right after break. Larry Gelbart, can you stay with us? We'd love to have you for a few minutes more.
Why not?
Great. Larry Gelbart, writer and executive producer of MASH, and with us from Los Angeles tonight, Chris Giralmo, co-creator with Stephen Bochco of Over There. It premieres tonight on FX, a cable TV drama about the war in Iraq. While the war in Iraq goes on, you can join us here tonight. Over There's producers say it is not political. Is that possible? And if a show about war isn't political, is that a good thing? And what do you think? What's the best model for bringing war to the screen? MASH, Hogan's Heroes, Full Metal Jacket, Saving Private Ryan. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Iraq War as TV drama, as entertainment in Over There, the new FX cable series co-created by Stephen Bochco and Chris Giralmo. It debuts, premieres tonight, 10 p.m. on Eastern on FX Cable. You can join our conversation tonight. How do you expect the minds behind Hill Street Blues, Mississippi Burning, and L.A. Law will go to Iraq? Chris Giralmo, co-creator, is with us tonight, as well as Larry Gelbart, writer and executive producer, Oscar nominee, Emmy winner of MASH. The final episode of MASH, of course, the most watched show in television history. Let's get a little more flavor of this new war saga. 13 weeks of it in the can, ready to go. Here's a clip where after a tough, a bloody first week on the ground, the soldiers are allowed to send video email back home. And Private Frank Dim Dumphy, played by Luke McFarlane, he's the Ivy League soldier in the platoon, tries to tell his wife how, after just a few days in Iraq, the war has changed him forever.
I don't know if I can explain to you in words what's happening to me. I don't mean shooting at men and being shot at. I mean inside. Someone said tragedy was the inevitable working out of things. And the tragedy here is we're savages. We're thrilled to kill each other. We're monsters. And war is what unmasks us. But there's a kind of honor in it, too. I guess if I'm a monster, it's my privilege to be one.
There, a clip from Over There, premiering tonight on FX. Chris Giralmo, let's go straight to it. Stephen Bochco has said repeatedly, you've said as well, the show has nothing to do with politics. But what on earth can you mean by that? I mean, how can a show about war, a war that's ongoing and hugely controversial, have nothing to do with politics? And if it did, what kind of show would it be?
I don't think it has nothing to do with politics. I just don't think it's about the politics of left and right or about policy questions or about whether or not we should have gone to war. It's about these young people on the ground fighting their grunts, you know what I mean? We decided at our first lunch together talking about the show that we were talking about privates and a sergeant and maybe an occasional lieutenant and captain, and that's it.
And you think that by aiming low in rank, you duck the issues, the big political issues swirling around the war?
I'm not trying to duck the issues. I'm trying to write about these kids and their real experiences, and they have their views about the war, and we get around to airing them occasionally, but mostly they don't sit around and think about policy questions. They sit around and talk about how they ended up here or people at home.
Larry Gelbart, what do you think? Can you duck the politics or let's say just humanize them by staying at grunt level?
Well, let me just say one thing first. That was a lovely piece of writing that we just heard a clip.
Yes, it was.
And two, I don't know. I feel so political about this war that maybe it's a blind spot with me. But I mean, I can't think about this war without becoming enraged. And all I can do is fight it in the occasional interview. But what's the conflict? Is the conflict just at some faceless people shooting at the guys you're supposed to and probably will, take a shine to, your heroes? I mean, I think you have to define the enemy, even if the enemy is yourself, you know? And if that's political, it's political, but it's also, a great element of drama.
So what's the enemy here, Chris?
Oh, geez. There's what we're writing our show about our characters. As I said, Bo is a high school ex-high school football star. Dim's the Cornell grad who still managed to become a private in the Army. It's hard to tell why. And Smoke's an ex-Compton gangbanger. And what they're really trying to do is get through the day, you know what I mean? Keep their asses intact, excuse my French. And their loved ones at home are hoping that they survive and going about their lives and sometimes drifting apart from them. And that's what we're writing about. We're writing about this, the war and the human consequences of war on these characters. And if you get involved with our characters, you'll have a hell of an experience, I can tell you that.
Chris, if we were doing a story conference now, if you're doing a Civil War thing, if you make it in the South and the North is the enemy, if you do it in the North, obviously the reverse. The British.
Oh, sure. There's no question that the insurgents are the enemies of our guys, but the real questions, the real situations that we put our characters in on the ground are a little more complicated and murky than that. For instance, in our second episode, our guys are at checkpoint duty. And I wrote this episode months before the Italian journalist had her disaster at a checkpoint, but we're putting our characters in the same kinds of situations, and they have seconds to decide whether the car that's coming at them fast in the middle of the night with its lights off is friend or foe. And when it accelerates, they have to make a decision in a split second that's
right.
Literally a matter of life and death. And that's really what we're writing about.
But you made a decision there, too, because when they stop that car and open it up, it's full of bombs. It's not as though that's a decision to make it that rather
one
than
is,
an Italian
yeah,
journalist or civilians. Isn't that politics right there?
I suppose at a certain level, but again, what we're trying to do is make a show that people can watch about these characters in these kinds of situations. As I said, we can say that there's a politics to finding yourself standing on top of a bomb, too, sure.
Chris, let me ask you a question, if I may. I'm thinking now as somebody who might be working on, not who wants to, but if I were doing a similar show, aren't you in a certain sense hostage to real events? I mean, I've noticed that the administration is now talking about not so much an insurgency as the beginning of a civil war in Iraq. Now, if you're bound to a certain vocabulary and to a certain set of actions, and reality takes a left turn or a right turn, it's like doing a movie of the week about a plane crash, and there's a plane crash that week, and you think, oh boy, we better reschedule this for 6 months from now. You know, with knowing the tight schedule you're on. Have you got any kind of wiggle room in case reality overtakes you or rewrites you?
What about it, Chris?
Well, we're going to have to try and be flexible insofar as we can. We're setting our show in kind of the unnamed recent past in Iraq. And that's what we're doing for the moment.
And you've got 13 episodes in the can. Does it mean you won't break from those? Or what if something really dramatic happens? Is this going to be like West Wing where reality's creeping into the storyline?
What if peace breaks out?
What about that?
Let me answer that question. I'll tell you something. I may be relatively rare in the television business feeling this way, but if the war in Iraq somehow came to an end very shortly and all our American soldiers came home with their limbs intact and alive and the Iraqis had some adequate fate as well, and our show got canceled for that reason, that would be fine with me. Stephen Bochco doesn't need the money. And I'll find another job. At the same time, while we're here in this situation, I've waited my whole life to do this job. You know what I mean? I believe in storytelling and its power to reveal the world. I believe that television's job, when it's done right, and it's very rarely done right, is to bring the world into your living room, warts and all. And that's what we're trying to do.
Well, we're talking roadside bombs here. And quick, let's get another caller. Scott's calling from Long Branch, New Jersey. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
We're good. What do you think, Scott?
Well, first of all, my point is, why do we need a fabricated program about war when, as citizens, we're not even seeing what's really happening there? Why aren't we having the coverage of this war the way it really should be?
You're saying send Fox News crews out instead of story writers?
Well, you know, I don't even know about, you know, mainstream news, even independent, even if it were, freelance people out there
showing
up.
Ernie Pyle, the real deal on the reporting side. But Scott, you know, what about? I mean, Ernest Hemingway wrote about war. We learned from that. MASH brought war to television. We learned from it. Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse. Now we've learned from a lot of entertainment versions of war. Not this time.
Well, you know, it sounds so much like a recruitment program. I mean, showing and glorifying people in uniform, when in reality, it's nothing like that.
Scott,
word for it, Scott. It's not a recruitment program.
I'm reading one reviewer here saying that though all the characters in this army are volunteers, this is Nancy Franklin in The New Yorker, none of them appear to be where they are by choice. What does she mean by that, Chris?
I'm not exactly sure, but back to something that Scott said. I have to tell you, it's my opinion that war is a natural subject for television, for better and for worse. It's got more drama than Law and Order and more action than 24, and like it or not, the blood of CSI. So,
but unfortunately, that's true in a way that's got nothing to do with your show, but. But, you know, I mean, from the beginning, the generals were literally calling the shots. I mean, the embedded reporters giving us what they, the Pentagon, wanted us to see. I mean,
well, we don't have those kinds of restrictions, Larry. We never courted Department of Defense cooperation.
No, you're smart.
That cooperation brings you a lot of things. It brings you materiel you can't get otherwise, helicopters and tanks.
Absolutely.
It also brings with it story approval, and that's the one thing we weren't giving away to anybody. We were going to try to tell the stories that we felt were real and honest about events on the ground in Iraq insofar as we can without anybody looking over our shoulders.
Unfortunately, I think you're inheriting, though, the impression that a lot of us have that there's been so much stage management of this particular war that is this going to be another example of that? I'm not saying you do it at all.
That it's baked in the cake. It's kind of intrinsic here.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that people will tune in tonight and see.
Tune in and see. And when the 13 weeks are over, what do you think the impression people are going to go away with is, Chris?
I hope that their idea of what's going on the ground in Iraq will have been expanded a little bit. That I would think I would be very proud if that were true. I would be very proud if people who know what they think about the war would watch the show and see a little bit more about it, and maybe that would inform their thinking as well.
Well, and with that, we're out of time. What a time we live in, where fiction and reality sit right on top of one another. Larry Gelbart, writer and executive producer of MASH, wonderful to have you with us tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Chris Giralmo, co-creator with Stephen Bochco of Over There. He wrote and directed the first episode, premiering tonight at 10 Eastern.
That's
on
my
FX.
Song.
That's him
my
singing
song
behind
playing
us.
Right there. Sorry,
written
Tom.
And performed theme song for Over There behind us. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Tom. And thanks a lot, Larry. I really appreciate it.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, NASA grounds its shuttle fleet. This is On Point.
Where ours is not to reason why.
Breaking news tonight on the space shuttle program. The entire fleet on Earth has been grounded while engineers assess the damage done to the shuttle Discovery during blastoff yesterday morning. A 1.5-inch piece of thermal tile appears to have fallen from the shuttle Discovery during liftoff. Today, the crew of the shuttle Discovery spent the day inspecting their ship for damage. Joining us with the latest developments from the Johnson Space Center in Houston is Tracy Watson, NASA correspondent for USA Today. Tracy, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So what's this step that's been taken, and what's the explanation for it?
Well, a far more serious problem has emerged since this morning's news that a piece of tile had come off the shuttle during liftoff. It turns out that a piece of foam insulation peeled off the shuttle's fuel tank during liftoff, too. And if you remember, that's exactly what dealt a fatal blow to Shuttle Columbia in 2003. Now, this piece did not hit the vehicle, but it is a major setback for NASA, which has spent the past 2.5 years trying to make sure big pieces of foam did not come off that tank.
How do you think it makes the crew in space feel when every other shuttle's been grounded before they've even come home? Why the announcement now, before this one's back on the ground?
Well, NASA has promised the public and the media, too, that they would keep us up to date and not hide any information during this flight. And they've been true to their word. They are updating us with the latest information. I can't imagine the crew is very happy about the fact that their vehicle had such a flawed launch, but they're professionals. They'll keep doing their job. And NASA managers do think, based on preliminary data, that the shuttle is probably safe to come home as it is.
Probably safe to come home. Will they be able to determine that with complete certainty before Discovery re-enters the atmosphere and hits all that heat that we saw break up the last shuttle?
Well, I think NASA managers would tell you that there's never complete certainty about anything in space, but they can get a pretty good look at this vehicle. They spent most of today, as you said, inspecting some crucial parts of the heat shield with a very sensitive laser that can see pretty small cracks and dings. They'll do more examinations of the shuttle on Friday, and they'll also take some pictures of the underside of the shuttle tomorrow and take a really good look at those pictures. And when you put all that data together, they should have a pretty good idea of whether or not it's safe for the shuttle to come home, though there's never any 100% certainty in this business.
Tracy, so as you say, the more serious news today, that insulation coming off the fuel tanks again, that's what happened last time, that's what led to the tragedy last time. How can it be that after that tragedy, after all the attention that's been paid to this, all the engineering that must have been poured into this, that insulation could be falling off again? It's hard to understand.
It is pretty hard to fathom. You're absolutely right. NASA has spent more than $1 billion over the last 2.5 years, mostly on trying to fix this problem. It has been their number one priority. And the shuttle managers who spoke to the media today were pretty crestfallen. And I think they themselves are asking the same question. How could we have been so wrong when we did extensive testing in wind tunnels and laboratories to make sure this did not happen again? And it wasn't just one large piece that came off the fuel tank. It was one large piece plus several smaller pieces, one of them from a place they never expected to have foam fall off of. So I think a lot of people there are very puzzled and very, very disappointed.
Well, we know it's a dangerous business, but it is disappointing to see this happening again. Tracy, just remind us of the schedule here. When do we need to be really focused on this shuttle coming back to Earth, that period of danger?
The shuttle returns to its landing site in Florida on Sunday, August 7th, very early in the morning, like 5 or 6 a.m., some other key dates are tomorrow. The crew of the International Space Station is going to take pictures of the places where the shuttle lost those tiles on its belly. And then on Friday, there will be a second supplementary inspection of the heat shield that was unplanned, just to double-check that nothing has hurt the shuttle and compromised its ability to make it home through the atmosphere.
Well, we'll be watching, and we're glad that you will be too. Tracy Watson, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tracy Watson is a NASA correspondent for USA Today. She spoke with us from Houston, Texas. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.